Welcome to Sound Off 116 here on SEScoops.com for Sunday, July 11th, 2010. I am the Solemn Monster here with you. Thank you so much, as always, for downloading the podcast. I want to thank each and every one of you that have taken the time to send an email, drop me a note, a Twitter comment, or if you read the note that I posted on Facebook earlier in the week regarding the personal situation I alluded to on the podcast last week. I shed a little more light on that situation, and I do thank you all for that. It really means a lot. Just to give a quick update on that, nothing has really changed all that much from a week ago, unfortunately. I have a relative who's still in the hospital who we are unable to communicate with, and you really don't realize how difficult the situation that is until you're actually in it yourself. It's like something out of a movie or a TV show. And for all the joking about The Undertaker being in a vegetative state and that whole storyline on SmackDown, not that this person is actually in a vegetative state, but it's almost like it. It's just, it's a surreal situation to be in, not fun at all, and being in and out of the hospital all week visiting, and it's frustrating that nothing has really changed. Certain things have gotten a little bit better, certain things have gotten worse. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do appreciate the comments many of you left on my Facebook page earlier. So I just wanted to get that out of the way early on here and just say that first and foremost. Also, for those of you who did not hear last week on the show, I mentioned that Webmaster Mike is off exploring the various sights and sounds and whatnot of Europe, bouncing around from one country to another on his own little National Lampoon vacation. In his absence, I have taken over the webmaster duties for SEScoops.com through most of the month of July. Having some fun with it so far. I did post, for those of you who missed it, it was kind of meant for entertainment, of course. It was an SEScoops exclusive. I linked to it on my Twitter page. Vince McMahon's foray into Twitter. Has some free time on my hands during the week, in case you couldn't tell. Having a little bit of fun. If you haven't checked it out, I thought it was amusing for what it was. Maybe you will too. If you haven't seen it, go back and check it out. It's on the page. I also posted an editorial that I'm going to talk about a little bit later regarding TNA. And speaking of tweets, not to beat the subject of Twitter to death, but Jeff Jarrett and more so Dixie Carter have been busy on Twitter promoting various surprises and shockers and whatnot for TNA fans. Shockers and surprises, mind you, and big things that, in my opinion, they have yet to deliver on. I'll talk about that in a little bit. But if you haven't checked out that editorial, you might want to read that first before you listen to the rest of the show, so get right on that. Also, if you hear any music in the background, I hope you can't, but if you can, I apologize. There's some sort of party that apparently I was not invited to going on outside, so just bear with me here. It's not as bad as it was a minute. I was going to actually start this recording about 10 minutes earlier, and I had to wait because it was so friggin' loud. But anyway, some quick comments here on LeBron James, which I'm sure absolutely nobody listening to this podcast could possibly care any less at this point about LeBron James. I would include myself in that, but I just have to have a quick comment here. Now, LeBron James, for those of you who don't know, has played for the Cleveland Cavaliers of the NBA for the last 7 years. He grew up in the state of Ohio, in Cleveland, I believe. He was a huge high school basketball player. I remember my friend, we would IM and text message or whatever back and forth years ago. He would tell me, because he lives in Ohio, about this kid whose high school games were being broadcast on ESPN, which was unheard of at the time, and he's going to be a big star, blah, 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 this and that. I've never really fancied myself a big basketball fan, so I really couldn't give a shit, but I thought, okay, cool, good for you guys. Let's be honest, the city of Cleveland has not had much to root for in many years. So LeBron James goes on to become probably the biggest thing in basketball since Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan, the face of the NBA. And I believe this past season the Cavaliers got as far as the finals, but they did not win the championship, obviously. So the big question was, now that LeBron James was becoming a free agent, would he re-sign with his hometown Cavaliers? Would he go somewhere else? So no less than half a dozen cities put together these ridiculous campaigns over the last couple of months trying to convince LeBron that their city was the place for him. And of course, I live in New York, and New York was no exception. We had all these ridiculous videos and these posters and these advertising campaigns and people that were friendly with him, trying to wine and dine him and convince him to come to the Big Apple and join the New York Knicks. And I'm not sure why anybody with a working brain would want to join the New York Knicks, but nonetheless. Even our mayor, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, was part of some sort of video where he was trying to convince LeBron to come to New York because it's so great and this and that. Whatever. In any event, LeBron basically said, fuck you to New York, and good for him. He said, fuck you to the Cleveland Cavaliers, which has gotten him in a bit of hot water, and he chose the Miami Heat to play with his friends Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, who are two of the better players in the NBA, okay? I'm not a huge NBA fan, but I know enough to know that that's the situation, okay? And I will admit that I watched the first half hour or so of this ESPN special that aired on Thursday night. You see, LeBron James and his people decided that it would be a wise move to work with ESPN to put together an hour-long live special called The Decision that would be geared around his decision on what team he was going to go to. So instead of just coming out with an announcement or a press release or holding a press conference and saying, hey, I'm leaving the Cavaliers and I'm playing with the Heat, he pretty much dicked everybody around, claimed that he didn't make his final decision until that morning, and you know, he had this setup where he was being interviewed by Jim Gray, who's a popular sports reporter. I'm not sure why. He's an asshole, but nonetheless, that doesn't mean he's bad at his job. It just means I don't like him. But in any event, they held this event at a very odd location. The Boys and Girls Club, which I believe LeBron has contributed to and has some sort of affiliation with, and that's quite noble on his part. Why the Boys and Girls Club in Greenwich, Connecticut, I'm not quite sure. Of course, there were a lot of people that thought he was joining the Knicks. Why else would he have this whole big deal in Greenwich, of all places? He comes from Cleveland. Of course, it wasn't the Knicks, it was the Heat. A lot of people very disappointed. They show people on the news in Cleveland burning his jersey. The Cleveland Cavaliers owner released a letter that same night that basically, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that from a major sports owner. I know Mark Cuban can be a crazy SOB, but this guy takes it to the next level, talking about how LeBron is just, you know, cowardly act, and he turned his back on the fans, and just completely running him into the ground, and claiming in his infinite wisdom that the Cavs would win a guaranteed, he personally, a Mr. McMahon-like guarantee that the Cavs would win an NBA championship before LeBron James does. I wouldn't bet my 401k on that, but okay, look, I give the guy props. He's got brass balls. He's probably going to get fined about $1 million by the commissioner, and maybe even a suspension would be in order, but whatever. Point is this. The entire TV special, which I took an interest in part also because I work in public relations, and let's be frank here, this entire fucking thing was complete PR. But it was the worst kind of PR you could think of. It was really a no-win situation for this guy. I mean, you have to have quite an ego to think that this would be a good idea. Let's just say he got some bad advice. In my opinion, the whole thing backfired in his face. The fact that he thought he was worthy of an entire hour, and to keep people waiting, and to think that he was above the game, no pun intended, to Triple H, is ridiculous. It's just a ridiculous notion. But he is a big WWE fan. LeBron James is a huge wrestling fan, always has been. Even Jerry Lawler did some sort of, he did a radio interview with, I forget the outlet, but he did a radio interview this past week that you could probably listen to online. I listened to it a couple of days ago. Really good interview with the King. He was in part promoting an independent show in Cleveland that he was competing on Friday night. And he talked a little bit about how, you know, LeBron James is a big wrestling fan, and obviously LeBron coming from Cleveland, the King, even though he's known for being the King of Memphis, is a huge fan of Cleveland sports teams, the Browns, the Indians, the Cavs. And he was saying that he hopes LeBron comes back to the Cavaliers, and if he does, you know, there'd be a position for him waiting in retirement to come into WWE and all this crap. I will say this. LeBron James, as much of an asshole as he may have come off this week, and I can't fault the guy. I'm not going to beat the guy up to the same degree that everybody else is just because he made a decision that made him happy. He wanted to play with his buddies. He wanted to make a lot of money, even if it wasn't the most money. He gave up making more money that he could have made elsewhere to go play with his buddies because he wants to win. You know what? I'm not going to begrudge the kid for that. I just think this whole charade was complete horseshit. You know, especially when there's still oil spilling out, you know, day by day by day in the Gulf. For this to have taken and dominated everything is the big story to me is a complete joke. But LeBron James will make a fine, fine heel if he ever does take the King up on his offer to come to WWE. It's not too late for Vince McMahon to shove a whole bunch of money in LeBron James's face and say, hey, can you be our anonymous GM? Because I think he would be fantastic in the role. I just had to say that. So that's the best suggestion I've heard yet for King James to change his mind. There's still time. He hasn't signed any contracts yet, I don't think. And to come on over to the Raw brand and be the anonymous GM helping Nexus. I think that would be quite a payoff to this anonymous GM storyline. Speaking of which, the anonymous GM is getting on my nerves. I watched Raw Monday night and saw some intensity from John Cena at the end of that show that I have not seen in quite some time, and I liked it. Unfortunately, he was also being very goofy and very unfunny in that final segment, which almost killed the entire thing for me. When he came out to confront Wade Barrett, the anonymous GM earlier in the night had said that the two of them would come face to face. He wanted them to shake hands, call for a truce, and there would be consequences if John Cena refused to do that. Of course, Cena didn't want to enter into any sort of truce, went to attack Barrett. But before that, Cena, who was being very serious, all of a sudden smiled and started laughing and started doing crappy Back to the Future comedy. I guess the story is it's the 25th anniversary of the Back to the Future movie. So he's just this awful, awful fucking writing that they gave him. And I almost turned the TV off. Thankfully, I stuck with it. Nexus came out. Other superstars came out to clean house. John Cena, defying the orders of the anonymous GM, beats the piss out of Darren Young. I mean, really beats the hell out of this kid. That I liked. And I think John Cena doesn't have to be serious 24-7, but I think when he takes it over the top with that comedy so much, it kills the whole thing. It just completely destroys, you know, whatever emotion or effect they're trying to go for. Get away from that, and let me see more of the type of John Cena that we saw at the end of the show on Monday night. That was the only really good part of the show that I enjoyed. That and the Randy Orton, Evan Bourne against Chris Jericho. Who was Jericho's? Was it Edge? Jericho and Edge were forced to be tag team partners. That was a really good match. It was a long match. They gave it a lot more time than they normally do on Raw. I saw some people complaining about the fact that Orton RKO'd Evan Bourne after the match. Oh, it just buries Evan. I did not read that way at all. And I think a lot of people forgot the fact that Orton and Evan Bourne are both in that Money in the Bank match at the pay-per-view coming up in a couple of weeks. I read that as Orton is simply attacking one of his opponents in the Money in the Bank match. I don't think they buried Bourne. If they were burying Evan Bourne, why would they have given him the victory? And yet another pinfall over Chris Jericho. It doesn't make any sense. So I had no problem with that. And I thought it was a great fucking match. The best match on Raw that I've seen in weeks. So thumbs up. Kudos to them for that. But not very enthused about everything else I saw on the show on Monday night. You know, the teasing of Steve Austin as the general manager. I as the interim GM of... interim GM. Interim... Yes, I am the GM of SE Scoops. Now, the interim webmaster this week, I've been getting a lot of feedback from people and looking at the comments more often on the posts. I was astounded by the number of people who actually took the bait and thought that Steve Austin was going to be the general manager. I mean, if there's one thing we've learned from wrestling is that if they're leading you in one direction and things seem a little too obvious, you can bet your ass that 9 times out of 10, not all the time, but most of the time, it's a swerve. And if they think that you know what the big surprise is, they don't like that. And they'll swerve you just for the sake of swerving you. So, it's not Steve Austin. Steve Austin is not coming back to be the GM. I was half expecting that every other announcement the GM would make later in the night would have a different wrestler catchphrase. Maybe we'll see it this week. Maybe this week the GM will send emails to Michael Cole and he'll ask the wrestlers if they smell what the GM is cooking. You know, or something to that effect. I don't know. Maybe it's Eugene. Maybe Eugene is the GM. You know, he used to do all the different wrestler impersonations. So, I don't know where they're going with this. I'm still not convinced that they know where they're going with this, but I sure as hell hope the payoff is worth it at the end. And that it's not just Vince McMahon, for example. If it was Michael Cole, which, you know, I'm still thinking there's at least a chance, that's about the only thing that would really even make any sense at this point. If Cole is just... you know, this is all just a charade and he's really the GM, I've got no problem with that because If it potentially takes him out of the announce booth, I'm fine with that. And even if it doesn't, I just think heel Michael Cole works a hell of a lot better than goofy play-by-play guy Michael Cole. So we'll see where they're going with this. But good intensity by Cena at the end of the show. He should be kicking more ass and telling less jokes because they're just not funny. Now, the other big story of the week, and this looks like it will affect SummerSlam, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on whether or not you're a fan of Triple H. News came out this week that WWE apparently did not want to get out, but, you know, in the age of the internet, these things have a funny way of happening. The story goes a little like this. I know we posted it on the website a little earlier in the week. Pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays baseball team. A lot of sports talk this week. Dirk Hayhurst, and I'm a baseball fan. I've never heard of this fucking guy before, but this pitcher for the Blue Jays, I guess, is rehabbing an injury. He was at a rehabilitation facility or a hospital. I don't know, but apparently he just so happened to see Triple H either being wheeled into the same room for physical therapy or recuperation, whatever it was, and he had found out that Triple H had just undergone some sort of operation. This was earlier in the week. He tweeted about it, I think, later on. He felt really bad because he realized he probably shouldn't have said that. He took the tweets down. But you can't undo what you've already done. The news is out there. As best as we can surmise, Triple H underwent some sort of surgery for a torn tendon in his arm. Which arm, I don't know. I'm not even 100% sure how or when the injury was sustained. I would guess it was likely during the filming of his latest WWE film. I don't know if the Chaperone is a comedy that he was either filming or just recently wrapped up and he was working on a different movie. But nevertheless, that's really what he's been doing of late, is doing some filming. And the safe bet was that he was going to be back on television probably either at or after the Money in the Bank pay-per-view and colliding with Sheamus in a match for the WWE Championship at SummerSlam, which, look, I don't need to see Triple H wrestling for the WWE title, but it does make sense. You know, him and Sheamus were involved in a feud. He beat Sheamus at WrestleMania. Sheamus came back and beat him in a street fight at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view in April. We haven't seen Triple H since. He comes back, wants revenge, likely wins the title. I would guess that it makes sense. I can't say that I'm terribly disappointed if Triple H is unable to compete at SummerSlam. I don't want to see people get hurt. But the belief is that if, in fact, he did have this surgery, he's not going to be able to be back in time for SummerSlam. If he is, it's quite a risk to be taking, especially with a guy who's injury-prone. Let's be honest, that's Triple H. He's had so many different muscle tears and tendon tears and torn quads and this and that over the years that, look, I'm not going to say that, I'm not going to speculate on why. I think we could all figure out why that is. People's muscles and tendons and whatnot are not meant to tear over and over again like that. And I'll leave it at that. The fact is, Triple H may well be out for a couple of more months. How long, we don't yet know. A guy like Triple H, knowing him, he'd probably want to come back as quickly as possible, even if he wasn't 100% healed. I just don't see how, if this is all true, and WWE has not confirmed it yet, but if it is true, I don't see how he makes it back in time, especially for a main event match at SummerSlam. If you're going to put him in a title match, you need to know that he's going to be ready for that pay-per-view, and I just don't think that he's going to be. So that's where things stand as far as Triple H is concerned. Horrible timing. But then again, if Triple H needs to take some more time off and doesn't get to main event SummerSlam, maybe somebody else will. Hopefully not John Cena. Maybe they'll give it to somebody else. But we'll see. You know, the key to remember here is that Triple H wasn't 100% healthy when he took his leave in April to go film some movies. He was having, and this was reported months ago, that he has been having some difficulty, I believe, with both of his formerly torn and surgically repaired quadricep muscles, which is definitely not good news. I don't think that he's had surgery on either leg to have those issues addressed. He may still be having those achy issues with his quad. He was also having some neck issues. So Triple H is pretty far from 100% right now and very, very iffy for SummerSlam. So let me talk a little bit about this editorial that I posted the other day on SE Scoops. And if you haven't read it yet, go read it before you hear this part of the podcast. It says editorial, the headline, the title is "A Plea to Dixie and Jeff, Shit or Get Off the Pot." That's the basic premise of this editorial, which, again, is my own opinion. That's why I put the word editorial in there, so all those people that got their undies in a bunch When you see the word editorial, it kind of speaks for itself. It does not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the other people that post on the website. And there are other people who will post news, not just myself, on SC Scoops. That's what makes it an editorial. It's no different than your local newspaper or the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal that have editorial sections with people's opinions. It just so happens that I think a lot of people share the same opinion that I do. Of course, the TNA fanboys who posted in the comments section are entitled to their opinion. They say that I'm a WWE fanboy. Yes, I am a fan of WWE. Thank you for stating the obvious. I'm also a fan of wrestling. Okay, I can enjoy wrestling other than WWE. It just so happens that I don't find myself enjoying TNA quite as much as I probably should, given the talent that they have on that roster. In case you haven't heard me in the past, I think their talent pool on that roster is perhaps even more talented collectively than WWE's current roster. The problem is in the execution. You know, you may have one good impact one week, and then the next 6 weeks are worth of shit. That doesn't do anybody any good. And it's no wonder this company is still drawing the same exact rating that they've been drawing for years. They have not expanded their fan base. They can get all the international TV deals, and they can make all the toys, and they can seemingly be broadening their horizons. They're still the same company they were a year ago, 2 years ago, maybe even in worse shape, believe it or not, because there was a point in the last few years where TNA was actually out of the red. They were making money. But they brought in more guys like Kennedy and Jeff Hardy and all these people. They kept spending, 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 and they don't bring in any new money. You know, their merchandise is actually doing pretty well, thanks in large part, if not entirely, to Don West. But they don't have the same sort of revenue streams that WWE has. They don't make the same kind of money WWE does off the DVDs and merchandising and video on demand and all of these different, you know, licensing. The amount of money that WWE makes off rights fees for Raw each week as compared to what they get for Impact, for example. Because Spike TV does pay TNA, but they're still losing money. They're bleeding money. They're hemorrhaging money. How much longer could that go on for? Maybe it goes on for another 8 years. I mean, the Carter family has been very tolerant thus far. I would love to know. They're not a publicly traded company, but I would love to know the exact figure as far as how much money they've lost on their investment in TNA over the years. I'm willing to bet that that figure is staggering. So in any event, we know the situation with TNA. So over the last couple of weeks, Dixie Carter, and I give her a lot of credit, as I did in the editorial, for having a Twitter page. It's kind of unique that the president of a wrestling company would be as open as she is. It's not like she's giving away state secrets on there or anything like that, but you know, I think it's cool that Dixie Carter interacts with the fans and has a Twitter page, because Vince McMahon certainly doesn't. I mean, you know, I if you read my post about what an hour in the life of Vince McMahon on Twitter would be like, I imagine it would be something like that. But the fact is, Vince doesn't have a Twitter. And for those of you that have written me and saying, hey, Solomonster, I hate to burst your bubble, but he actually does, prove it to me. Maybe WWE, the WWE Universe fan page or whatever, they may have set one up for him. Show me one tweet from Vince McMahon. He has not Twittered, he has not tweeted, he has not said anything. He doesn't have a Twitter page. Dixie Carter does. The problem is, she's been teasing these big announcements over the last couple of weeks. So a couple of weeks ago, you may recall, before the Slammiversary pay-per-view, she started talking about, she was This unbelievable news that she couldn't wait to tell everybody about. She couldn't sleep at night. She actually said this. She could not sleep at night. At one point, there was a tweet saying that she had talked to Kevin Kay, who I believe is the president of Spike TV, or at least he's a very high-ranking official with the network. I don't have his exact title in front of me, but he's a Spike TV bigwig, if not the head cheese. And she had said that she talked to him, and he was completely and totally on board with what TNA was about to do. Didn't expand on that, of course. Didn't give us any further hints as to what that might be. Now, going into the pay-per-view, people assumed that there was going to be some sort of game-changing announcement made at the event. Obviously, there wasn't. Or there was, and whatever their plans were fell through, because Dixie then had to go online and say, well, I never said that the big news was going to be revealed at the pay-per-view. It'll be made obvious over the course of several weeks. Instead, the little surprise that she teased turned out to be Tommy Dreamer at the pay-per-view. Whoop-de-fucking-do, all due respect to Tommy Dreamer. In 2010, you have the president of a wrestling company on her Twitter page teasing some sort of announcement that's going to be, you know, in one case, it's going to rock the very foundation of TNA, and then she's hyping another surprise, and then fucking Tommy Dreamer walks out. Obviously, people were a little upset by that. So anyway, it's been a couple of weeks now since Slammiversary. In fact, I think it's been about 3 weeks or almost 3 weeks. And, you know, I've seen not every Impact show. I've actually seen this past week's show, and I saw most of the week before. There were actually things that I liked, and there were the usual things I didn't like. But again, Impact is very spotty. It's not like Impact has turned a corner. They have new people writing the show, a fresh vision. It's the same people. It's the same shit. They have a pay-per-view coming up, Victory Road, this Sunday. If you look at the card, you got matches like Kurt Angle and the Pope that I think have the potential to be fucking great. You know, I think it's a 9-match card. It should be a good show. It'll be your usual TNA pay-per-view. You'll have some garbage, and you'll have some good stuff. And you'll have the usual wacky, crazy booking, I'm sure. The fact is this. TNA has reached a point now where they can't afford to be teasing their fans anymore. We know that they're going after Paul Heyman, and it's not a rumor anymore. It's not a rumor that I'm talking about or that the Wrestling Observer website or SEScoops.com or whatever has posted, okay? Paul Heyman himself has now publicly talked about it. He has said, yes, he has had conversations with Dixie Carter and TNA. It is no secret they want him badly. They've wanted him badly now for many, many, many weeks. This angle they're doing where they're putting together this extreme faction of Tommy Dreamer and Stevie Richards and Raven and Rhino. It's the second coming. Actually, I can't even say the second coming. It's more like the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth coming of ECW. We've seen so many ECW reincarnations. The fact that they actually think this is a good idea in 2010 is mind-boggling. This is in spite of the fact that WWE brought back ECW just about 4 or 5 years ago. We all know how that turned out. Obviously, they can't call it ECW. I don't know what they're going to call it. But obviously, there's some sort of extreme faction brewing here. Okay, they've got plans for something. I'm curious to see what they are. Abyss, perhaps, will have some sort of connection to this group that's been teased. We'll see where they go with it. They've been trying to get Paul Heyman in to be the on-screen leader of the group. That's the coup de grace for them. They want Paul Heyman to come in and not only lead the charge in creative behind the scenes, they want him to be on camera each week, or at least on camera some weeks, leading this group of extreme misfits, I guess you would say. Heyman really doesn't have an interest in going back on TV as a full-time character. That's number one. Number two, the bigger question is, would Heyman come in and take control of creative? He's not going to work in a team environment. If Heyman comes in, he wants to have control. I've seen where it's been reported he wants the Dana White treatment. Dana White, of course, is the president of the UFC. I believe he has a small ownership stake in it, although the Fertitta brothers are really the owners of UFC. But Dana White is basically, he's the head guy there. I mean, he is the face of UFC. He's the promoter. He does an awesome job. I don't think the man ever sleeps. He loves fighting. He speaks his mind. Sometimes that works against him. He uses salty language. I like that about him. I actually think it's charming, quite frankly. But the fact is, Heyman wants that role in TNA. He doesn't want to just come in and write TV with Vince Russo. And it's been said that Russo has said he's willing to step aside if Heyman comes in. That's all fine and good. Paul wants more than that. He wants to basically control the company. He wants points in the company. He wants, you know, if they become a publicly traded company like WWE, he wants stock options. He wants to make millions so that he knows his kids are provided for many years to come. He loves wrestling, but he doesn't need wrestling. That's kind of the message here. He's got a lot on his plate. He's got his Heyman hustle. He's working on Brock Lesnar's autobiography with him. He's got one or two other potential projects in the pipeline. And he's become just as much a fan of MMA as he is wrestling. But wrestling is still in his blood. Paul Heyman is a very creative person. He's a very passionate person. He may not be a very good business person. You know, if the doom of the original ECW is any indication. But forget that for a second, okay? We're talking about Heyman from a creative perspective. When Heyman took control of OVW, Ohio Valley Wrestling, okay, WWE's developmental promotion at the time, when Jim Cornette was relieved from his duties, it's unfortunate that I did not have access to those OVW tapes. I've only been able to since see clips on YouTube, but I would read reports of the OVW shows and what they were doing at the time. Matt Capitelli, for example, was one of the big stars in OVW. He was on Tough Enough. He was the guy that got abused during season 2, I believe it was, you may recall, by Hardcore Holly. He probably would have been a big star. You know, him and Morrison, those guys, they came up together during the Tough Enough days. Unfortunately, Capitelli was diagnosed with brain cancer, and I know he's still battling that, and he's pretty much out of the business right now, and that's a shame. But during those days, Heyman was booking awesome television for OVW. Very realistic, you know, intense kind of stuff. Just awesome stuff, because he knows how to, I don't want to say tug at the heartstrings, but he knows how to kind of grab people by the balls. And if you grab anybody by the balls, and the guys out there listening know what I'm talking about, you're going to be pretty emotional, okay? That goes without saying. I'm talking, of course, metaphorically speaking. So, Heyman, I think, would be able to really help TNA. Can he save TNA? Is Paul Heyman signing with them the one-and-done solution to TNA's ills? I don't think that's the only thing that's going to change TNA, but I think it'll go a long way. And I think whatever Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff have been doing, you know, Bischoff has been working with TNA now for over 6 months. Okay, it's been over 6 months. And I don't know about you, but any changes I've seen since, you know, they went from the six-sided ring to the four-sided ring and the different set with the ramp and all that, you know, any other changes have been relatively subtle. You know, maybe they use different camera angles and they have that more documentary-style filming of backstage vignettes and stuff. You know what? I thought those were nice, cool little changes, but we're beyond that at this point. We need big changes. And when Dixie Carter goes on her Twitter and teases big changes, and she doesn't even have Paul Heyman signed to a contract, you listen to Heyman talk, and they're nowhere close on terms unless he's just swerving everybody and pulling everybody's leg. You know, he ain't showing up at the pay-per-view this Sunday. That's pretty much from his own mouth. They would love for him to be at Victory Road. That's not going to happen. Will they get him? Maybe. But it's going to take a lot of promises by Dixie. She's going to have to prove, I think, that Heyman, if he came in, would have the kind of power that he wants. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to put it down on paper, to sign the contract and actually give it to the guy and say, here are the keys to the castle. Do what you need to do. Have fun. Make us money. You know, get our brand name out there. Heyman has said it's not just about booking. It's not about storylines. You've got to know how to market yourself. Nobody fucking knows who TNA is. Nobody outside the wrestling bubble knows what TNA is. They think it's tits and ass. That's what they think. And it's a company that's been around for 8 years. 8 fucking years this company has been around for. That's a long time. And they're still the same ratings. They're still running their TV show out of the same building in Universal. I know that they probably save more money by doing that than if they went somewhere else. You're not making any money. Those tickets are free. It's the same 900 people every week. And then the tourists come, okay? And so you have people visiting from Europe, okay? Big fucking deal. You got to take it out of that impact zone and put the show on the road once a month, twice a month. Put it in an actual arena. The problem is they don't have the kind of fans they need to fill up that arena. And a half-empty arena is going to look like shit. So it's a catch-22. But they've got to make changes. But when Dixie Carter and Jeff Jarrett has now gotten in on the act, he's been teasing something the last couple of days, which I think is probably completely separate from whatever Dixie is teasing. I think it's probably something on a lesser scale. Maybe they're going to tour another country or, you know, bring a pay-per-view somewhere outside of Orlando. But he's also gotten on the bandwagon where he's teasing this big surprise. Good luck with that, because more often than not, and I'm not just talking TNA here, I'm talking WWE, whenever they start promoting some sort of big surprise, more often than not, it's usually a letdown. I mean, look at the anonymous GM stuff for Raw. I don't know what the ultimate payoff is going to be, but I'm willing to bet, you know, people are out there saying Austin Rock and this and that. I've now thrown LeBron James' name in there. Whoever it ends up being, a lot of people are probably going to end up being disappointed, and that's the problem. That's the problem when you do this. So whenever Dixie posts a new tweet, this is going to change, that's going to change, I talked to this person, you'll never guess who I talked to this week, but you will soon. How much longer are you planning on waiting? You know, it's like somebody who's drowning. You know, you're in the bathtub, half your body is submerged, the water is building and building and building and building. Eventually you're going to get to the point where you're completely submerged and you're not able to breathe. And at that point, it's only a matter of time. So I read a lot of the wrestling newsletters. I pay for to get the news so I can, you know, be up to speed on what's going on and whatnot. And there's been more talk lately than there has been in months. That's kind of scary, actually. That TNA is, I won't say on the brink of going out of business. Okay, because nobody knows that for sure. But there's enough people, I guess, talking that work backstage behind the scenes in TNA. Things aren't looking too good. And again, if the Carter family, if Bob Carter, okay, Dixie's father, who basically is the force behind this funding that TNA has, suddenly decides, you know, fuck this shit, it's not worth it anymore, what happens to TNA? Unless somebody else swoops in with the money that they need to keep operating, they're fucked. And all of a sudden, you go from having two national wrestling promotions right back to one where we were, you know, 9 years ago when WCW went out of business. TNA is nowhere near the level of even WCW, but at least there's a number two. You know, you could say Ring of Honor is a distant number three because even they don't have the resources to compete with TNA and WWE, but Ring of Honor is officially national, being now that they're on HDNet. But, you know, TNA goes belly up. We're right back where we were 9 years ago. And I don't know about you, but 2002, WWE, 2003, look, there were some great days on SmackDown back then when you had Brock Lesnar and Benoit and Angle and some great fucking matches. Maybe I'm just thinking more of the Raw brand when that was during Triple H's Reign of Terror. Those were not specifically my favorite years of WWE. You know, competition does breed more competition. Competition will breed, you know, this sense of, you know, we got to light a fire under our ass and do something. Competition is good. WWE doesn't have very much of that even now, but if TNA goes away, then there's literally no more competition left for WWE, and that's not good. I don't want to see TNA fail. I want to see the idiots who are making these decisions go away. You know, I want to see smart people who know what the fuck they're doing being brought into TNA or working their way up. You know, they probably have a lot of smart people backstage working for them right now who, unfortunately, they don't have the power. They're not the ones with the power. Dutch Mantel, for years, worked for TNA. He's a smart guy. He has been a proven, successful booker. And when all that political BS went down with Jeff Jarrett dating, you know, Karen Angle, and Kurt Angle was pissed and everything, and, you know, one of Jarrett's close friends and allies was Dutch Mantel, and I think it's pretty safe to say the reason Dutch got fired from TNA was in direct, you know, relation to that whole situation. So now they're getting rid of people who could potentially help them. You know, Dutch Mantel never had the power to really run things creatively in TNA. Maybe he would have done a good job. We'll never know. The bottom line is, enough with the fucking tweets, enough with the fucking, teases. If you have something to announce, announce it already. You know, if TNA was operating from a different position and they were making money and they were being very successful, they can tweet all the surprises and all the teases that they want to. Like WWE. They could do that now if they wanted to. You know, because they actually are making money. They actually have an audience of 5 million each week. You know, it's not anywhere near what it was 10 years ago, but still. But TNA, you know, they're it's just amazing to me. You know, what are you hoping to accomplish by doing that, by raising everyone's expectations? If you know for a fact that you can deliver, then God bless you. You know, I hope they can. Maybe they really think they're going to get Heyman. Maybe not this week before the pay-per-view, but maybe they think in the next couple of weeks it's a done deal. I don't know. All I know is that if I'm the president of TNA, instead of going on Twitter and teasing everybody and saying, oh, you can't wait to find out who I talk to, I don't give a flying fuck who you talk to. Unless you sign them and they're going to help TNA. You can talk to anybody you want to. You know, Dixie Carter, she talked to Mickie James recently. You know, I don't see her coming into TNA yet. She probably will when her non-compete expires. She talks to a lot of people. I don't give a shit. Show me that you've actually brought somebody into the fold that can help your fucking company, and then maybe I'll care. So that was the whole nature of that editorial. You know, these tweets have just gotten out of control. Their track record sucks when it comes to these things. Let's just hope they've got an ace up their sleeve, because if they don't, I don't think a year from now Dixie Carter will be doing too much tweeting. All right, so I'm going to run through a whole bunch of questions here in the mailbag, and then we're going to wrap it up because I've got, unfortunately, more important things to tend to. But let's kind of barrel through this here. Now, some of these questions, actually most of these questions, I've already answered directly. I was on a tear this week. I was answering questions. I was making posts. I was mocking up fake tweets. It was a good week at SC Scoops. But let me go through some of the better questions here. Now, one person here, Matt, one of our listeners, faithful listeners for many centuries, he's been listening to this podcast now, wrote in with a question about the invasion. He is one of these people who is actually a big fan of the invasion from back in 2001. Obviously, I'm not the biggest fan of the invasion, but here was my response to Matt. And I've talked about this before. I would never call the invasion the worst, and nor have I ever called it the worst angle WWE has ever done. I have called it the most botched, the most mangled one. The one where they could have made millions upon millions upon millions upon millions, and they only made millions. Basically, that's kind of the way, the best way to sum up the invasion angle from 2001. Now, you know, revisiting that pay-per-view from time to time, you know, even I get a bit nostalgic about it because, in part, today's product is nothing like it was a decade ago. You know, they had guys as part of that invasion that came over from WCW who were younger, who could work. You know, that's all fine and good. The fact is that an invasion like that was always going to succeed or fail on the star power that you had. You know, the young guys make a great supporting cast, but you really need to make a splash by bringing in the big guns. Eric Bischoff, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Sting, Goldberg, Scott Steiner, Hall, Nash. Any combination of those guys. That's not to say that they were all fantastic workers. They were not, but it would have given it credibility right off the bat. People care about big stars, let's be honest. And if you're going to do this once-in-a-lifetime angle that gets dropped in your lap, you don't go with the second-string crew. You just don't do that. You know, over time, you could phase those guys out, even if you bring them in initially. You know, people wanted to see dream matches, and we never really got that. You know, and then once they merged WCW and ECW together, and they assigned Steve Austin, who, of course, was a WWF headliner, as their leader, it just became another wrestling faction. In some ways, the way that Nexus, I think, is quickly becoming just another faction. So the sadder thing is this. Had they not been so goddamn cheap, they could have done this thing right. You know, they didn't want to pay a few extra million dollars to buy out some of the guaranteed contracts. This is, mind you, despite the fact that the millions they would have made off doing this angle correctly would have far exceeded whatever they spent. I mean, they would have gotten a great return on their investment. Instead, they waited and waited and waited and waited and waited, and then they ended up bringing in each one of those guys anyway. They brought in Hogan and Hall and Nash. They brought in Steiner. They brought in Bischoff. They brought in Goldberg. They brought in Flair. Of course, by then, it was too late. You know, the Invasion pay-per-view back in 01 did 775,000 pay-per-view buys. Okay? To this day, it's still the most successful non-WrestleMania pay-per-view the company's ever done. My point is this. Imagine how much bigger that number would have been with Hogan, Flair, Sting, Goldberg, and all those guys fighting for WCW at that pay-per-view. And then, you know, when the Invasion pay-per-view was over, it doesn't end there. I mean, they could have tried running WCW as a separate entity. And quite frankly, you know, even if they didn't want to do that, they could have dragged that shit out until WrestleMania the following year. And you could have had a whole series of three or four or five singles dream matches at WrestleMania. If you wanted to do Goldberg and Austin, Austin Hogan. You know, if you wanted to Rock and Sting, Sting and Undertaker, whatever the case may be. That was my point. It is the most bungled angle in the history of WWE. And it was successful even for what it was, but just knowing how much better it could have been, and maybe things today would have been different. Maybe things today would have been different. Instead of Raw, SmackDown, it would be WWE and WCW. You know, but we'll never know. Back on the subject of what I was talking about a little earlier with Dixie Carter and her tweets, not to beat this thing to death here, but I got an email earlier in the week, well before I did my my editorial, from a fan of the podcast. She's actually a morning DJ and sportscaster in California, and listens to the Sound Off, which is kind of cool. And she had some correspondence with Miss Dixie Carter on Twitter herself, because again, this person is not the biggest fan of Dixie's ridiculous tweets and teases, and she was the recipient of an angry phone caller on her show on the air, who challenged her to go on Twitter and converse with Dixie and let her know what she really thought. And she attached a screenshot here, because Dixie did respond to her. And, let's see here. There were two responses, but Dixie's last response to this person was, "I'm pretty confident the fans won't be pissed." That is, of course, in reference to the surprise that she keeps teasing. "It won't happen for weeks. Lots to do." Now, this was back on June 17th, so this was not this past week. This was, actually, that was probably just before the Slammiversary pay-per-view, back when I believe Dixie probably thought she had Paul Heyman. That's my guess. I don't know that for a fact. But again, she says it right here. "I'm pretty confident the fans will not be pissed. It won't happen for a few weeks." Well, again, it's been 3 weeks, and nothing's happened. I think that speaks volumes. We'll see. I mean, you know, it was interesting, though, looking at the screen cap that she sent over. This is directly from Dixie's mouth, and or fingers, I suppose. And I sure hope she's right. I sure hope she's right. A fan writes in. That may be the most ambiguous name anybody's ever used in one of these emails. Actually, he does say his name is Mo, so I apologize. But Mo basically, in his diatribe here, wanted to know why SmackDown is so shitty and why WWE doesn't seem to be giving it the same attention they devote to Raw. As I mentioned to Mo in my email response, WWE is well aware of the fact that SmackDown is in lame duck mode right now on my network. It's such a shitty network. It's not even considered a real network anymore. That's how shitty it is. They don't even monitor weekly ratings for it. Until they make the jump to Sci-Fi this October, SmackDown is going to continue to play second fiddle to Raw. The bottom line is, the only time that the show in its history has never played second fiddle to Raw, in my opinion, was that 2002-2003 period, when it was at its peak with Paul Heyman, not only writing, but he was also an on-air character. Brock Lesnar, Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, Hulk Hogan. That was an awesome period. And in fact, SmackDown was the A show for a while. So it's definitely not at the level it used to be. You know, Mo hopefully will at least be happy to know that when SmackDown does move in the fall, I would expect WWE to make a very big deal out of it, and maybe even move some key guys over to Friday nights, at least temporarily, to help give the show a boost. I mean, the fact is, Sci-Fi will want maximum effort put forth. They want ratings. They want the show to do well. That first SmackDown special, which I believe is October 4th, is actually going to be a live show that I believe will have Raw and SmackDown guys on it. So they're going to put their best foot forward those first few weeks. What happens after that remains to be seen. They're not going to have the same audience for the show that they used to have, because Sci-Fi is not as strong of a network. But in my opinion, I mean, at this point, it may well be better than my network. So give it a couple of months, and if you're a big SmackDown fan, you may, you know, suffer through the show now. It's not all bad, you know, from what I see of SmackDown. It's not always a bad show. In fact, you probably get better wrestling overall on that show than you do on Monday nights, but I agree. I mean, the show has definitely not been that, you know, exciting of late. So hopefully that'll change in October when they make the move. Steve from Brooklyn writes in. He was a very avid supporter of TNA, and says that many had high hopes, as I did, that going to Monday nights would be a good move for TNA. Obviously, it didn't turn out to be the case. He's now one of these people who believe without Paul Heyman, TNA and this ECW group along with it will die a slow and painful death within the next 12 to 24 months. I hate to say that because the industry needs competition, the wrestlers need options, and the fans need to be entertained, and the way both TNA and WWE are going, the entertainment value is so very slim at this point. I don't know if in the case of TNA any of it can be salvaged. Well, I mean, you're preaching to the choir here. Can one person save the company? You know, and save, it's such a corny word to use. I picture Paul Heyman in his Superman cape flying in, but what a visual that would be, by the way. We'll see. Heyman's a smart guy. It doesn't have to be Heyman. That's the thing. I mean, everyone's talking about Heyman like he's a fucking prophet. You know, he is a genius in many ways. He's very, very persuasive. You know, all the old ECW guys would say that all the time. I mean, Paul could be lying to their face, You know, but they could walk into a meeting with him so angry and pissed off, ready to knock his block off because he either they didn't get the push they were looking for, or they, you know, Paul was late on payments, they need, you know, they wanted their money. They would barge into his office, which really wasn't an office at all. He just basically put his desk in the middle of the locker room. And they would come away from it feeling more inspired than they ever have before, because Heyman is a motivator. He's a great bullshit artist. He would make a great PR guy. You know, it doesn't have to be him, though. Anybody who is competent, who has experience in the wrestling industry, because as we've seen, you bring in people that have no fucking idea what wrestling is all about, things normally don't work out too well. The two examples that jump out at me are Jim Herd, back in 1990 WCW, and Dixie Carter, quite frankly, who I'm sure is a very nice lady. But before TNA, before her daddy started pumping money into it, she didn't know anything about the wrestling industry. She may have watched it on TV. So have I. So have you. Does that mean that we could run TNA? Does that mean I would want to run TNA? Of course not. But she happens to be in a position where she may not be writing the shows herself. That may be Russo's job and Matt Conway's job, his writing assistant. But, you know, she, much like Vince McMahon in WWE, everything goes through her. She does make certain changes and you know, yay and nay on certain creative decisions. And she makes a lot of other decisions as well with respect to marketing and promotions. Two areas that TNA, quite frankly, is very, very weak in right now, especially for a company that's been around as long as they have. You know, Jim Herd, Dixie Carter, not very good company to be in. Paul Heyman, I mentioned Dutch Mantel earlier. Jim Cornette, I'm not even sure. You know, I don't agree with every vision that Cornette has. He can be a little too old school for my taste sometimes. I think Cornette would do a fine job too. A fine job. A much better job than the people currently running the company. Jerry Lawler. I mean, obviously he's working for WWE. I'm not saying Jerry Lawler is going to TNA or they want him, but, you know, Jerry Lawler is also a very smart guy. He certainly knows how to get himself over. He made a career out of that in Tennessee, you know, putting himself over for over 30 years now. But he's a creative guy, too. And anytime we see Lawler on television doing something these days, this past Monday night, in fact, you know, when they led that video package, which, by the way, was phenomenal, that Ricky Steamboat video package showing him getting beaten down by the Nexus, which, you know, was a little eerie knowing what happened to him in real life. But it was very well done with the music and very eerie, very creepy. But Lawler's on-camera 30-second intro into that segment was phenomenal. He's a great talker. You know, Lawler could be the face on camera of TNA. And I think he could probably contribute ideas behind the scenes, too. I'm just spitting out names here of people that I have read about, that I know about, that would seem to me to be a good fit in a position like that. Very creative, who could probably all do a better job in their sleep than the people currently writing those TV shows for TNA. It doesn't have to be Paul Heyman, but goddammit, that Jew knows what he's doing. There's no other way to put it. I think I heard Heyman use that expression once. He's like the mad Jew. You know, whoever it is, give him a shot. Because really, at this point, what the hell do you have to lose? Bill writes in, "Dear Solo Monster, here's my official guess as to what Jeff Jarrett is referring to with regard to the surprise he was teasing on his Twitter page." Of course, Jarrett posted three pictures. Picture number one is a picture of a faraway island. And Bill believes that the island is a metaphoric explanation, quote, "to set apart," end quote. Picture number two, which is of a giant spotlight. This is, of course, a metaphoric explanation, quote, "to showcase," end quote. And the third picture is of an airport tunnel, as in the tunnel entryway that TNA used to have as part of their old set to stand apart from WWE. So Bill believes that this means the six sides potentially are coming back. His guess is that beginning at the pay-per-view, things are reverting back to the way they used to be. What do you think, Solo Monster? I think that if you are accurate here, and I don't believe you are, but if you were to be accurate, I think that that would be a pretty shitty surprise. That's what I think. Lee writes in, What was the most disturbing wrestling angle you ever saw? For me, it was Batista choking the life out of Shawn Michaels in the build-up to their match at Armageddon 2003. This is from Lee, listener since episode one, one of the hardcores. Good to hear from you, Lee. I actually don't recall that, believe it or not. I recall them having a match. That was back when Batista was in Evolution. But I don't remember the build-up being anything special. I think the build-up to the Batista-Michaels match after Flair retired in 08, I think that was at the Extreme Rules or whatever that pay-per-view was in June, that was actually much better. To say that that was the most disturbing thing, especially since I don't remember it and I remember most of these things, you know, to each their own, maybe for you it was, but not for me. Actually, the one that jumps out at me, which was pretty disturbing, especially now in this PG era of WWE, looking back on it, was back in 2001 when Austin and Triple H, as the two-man power trip, beat the crap out of Lita and the Hardy Boys on Raw. I remember Austin giving Jeff Hardy one of the most vicious chair shots to the skull, which, again, in hindsight, knowing what we now know, is even more scary that I've ever seen. And then the way they beat up Lita, you know, it's not like we've never seen man-on-woman violence in wrestling before. We have, but they just beat the hell out of her. I mean, Triple H was kicking the shit out of her on the mat. He gave her a pedigree. She took it really well. She takes the pedigree a lot better than people take it now. It doesn't even look like it hurts. But then, of course, Austin proceeded to beat the crap out of her with a steel chair. He gave her a stunner at the end. The people didn't quite know what to make of it. Can you imagine? I mean, just to show you how much times have changed, can you imagine an angle like that, how that would go over on USA, on Raw these days? It wouldn't. They'd be thrown off the air. That's how much things have changed. So, to me, that was far more disturbing. You know, and there's certainly been a lot of disturbing angles, but disturbing in a different way. You know, Katie Vick was disturbing, but just disturbing because of its stupidity. But that's a little bit different. So I'd have to go with the beatdown on Lita and the Hardys from 01. That's going to do it for Sound Off 116 this week. Mailbag, great as always. If you've got questions, write into me at thesolomonster@gmail.com. That's still the best way to reach me and get your question on the air. I may do something one of these weeks with the mailbag. I'll just take maybe Twitter questions, or maybe one week I'll put a thread up on Facebook, and it'll just be I'll just ask people to post questions in the Facebook thread. That might be something I think of doing, maybe even this week. By the way, you can friend me on Facebook if you have not already done so, facebook.com/thesolomonster. On Twitter, it's twitter.com/solomonster. I want to thank all the people that have started following me on there. We're well over 550 now in terms of followers. And subscribe to The Sound Off via iTunes. I say it every week. It's the easiest way to get the podcast automatically downloaded to your computer for quick and easy listening. So that's going to do it. Again, thank you all for the emails and the posts and just the thoughts on what's going on. Hopefully that situation with my family will improve, and I'll have good things to report on that. And again, having fun posting and running things on sescoops.com. If you have any ideas, by the way, for any features or stories or anything like that that you'd like to see on the main page of the website, let me know. I've got the keys to the car for a couple more weeks in Webmaster Mike's absence. I'm not around all the time to post news, but again, I'm not the only one posting news, just so you're aware. I am not the only one. And we'll be back soon enough with Sound Off 117. We're going through these like nothing. So until next time, be well, stay safe. We'll see you right back here next week. Take it easy, guys.
You've been listening to The Solomonster.
You know, I really don't understand what they're doing. Anybody agree with me out there? I mean, anybody. Come on, throw me a bone here.
Probably the single dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
God, I love this business.
On SE Scoops.